Welcome to That Anthro Podcast, the podcast dedicated to anthropology. Together, each week, we will be learning from the experts and researchers that are researching our pasts and today's problems. My name is Gabriella Campbell, and I'll be interviewing a new guest each week to bring to you the latest and greatest in anthropology, based right here out of Santa Barbara. Join me for weekly episodes, whether you're an anthropology buff or looking to learn something new. Welcome to That Anthro Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive. CarMax. The way car buying should be. Start shopping now at CarMax.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another week of That Anthro Podcast. Thank you so much for all the support on the re-release of this season three. I'm so happy to be back podcasting, and I'm particularly excited about this week's episode. You know, I'm always excited. I wouldn't be producing the podcast if I didn't love every guest I had on. This week, we have Jeanette Lombardi and Kayla Stevens, who this summer lived in D.C. and worked for the American Anthro Association. Well, it was an internship, but they did quite a bit of work. The Lois Lamphere internship that the American Anthro Association has every year. There's always two spots available for students. They were selected and they were there living in DC for about 6 weeks. So I talked to both of them individually. The first part is Kayla. The second part is Jeanette. Learn a bit about them and the work that they did at the American Anthro Association and the lessons that they took away. They're both really interesting, fascinating people who are working on different things, and I'm really thankful that I got to meet both of them and get to share a bit about this internship program with you all, especially if anyone is interested in looking for an internship. I think that this is a great one. Thank you again to the American Anthro Association for putting me in contact with these lovely women. I'm very thankful that they took the time to speak with me. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Today we have a very special guest. Her name is Kayla Stevens. She's a rising senior in anthropology and environmental studies at the College of Worcester, but you're also pursuing a pathway in museum and archival studies. So just to kind of start off, we're going to talk a little bit about how you settled on your major. Kind of tell me about that process and whether it was started before college or in college. I'd love to know.
I didn't really know about anthropology at all in high school. I didn't even know it was a thing that like existed. Like I'd never even heard of the word, I don't think. I was very much someone in all the different like college tours and throughout the whole college admissions process where I was always the one saying, I don't know what I want to study. I'm undecided, but I'm just trying to find like an environment that works well for me. And I don't think I had really even heard about anthropology until my dad mentioned to me, he's like, you know, there's this thing called anthropology that you might find interesting. So then I had that like in the back of my mind, and I think I had like Googled like, what is anthropology? I was like, okay, this sounds kind of cool. So when I got to the College of Worcester, we had this like session where you choose, you know, what classes you're going to take your first semester. I was like, I know I want to study anthropology. And I think that spring, like my spring in my senior year of high school, I had my cousin went to the College of Worcester as well. He was a year older than me. So my aunt had been kind of like lurking on the college website to see, because she had known that I was maybe interested in anthropology. And she had seen, oh, there's this professor who does, you know, he seems like he would be a good one to talk to. So I had emailed him being like, hey, what's anthropology? Like, I feel like I might want to study it if I come to Worcester. Can you just explain it to me? Because I have no idea. So he explained it to me and it was really helpful. And he kind of told what it looked like at the department. So then when I was at that like first year class selection event, I guess, when we went to choose what classes to take, I was like, yes, I know, it was so stressful, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, yeah. I know this professor, I've been in touch with him, I'm gonna take his class. So it was just like the intro to anthropology, yeah, or whatever.
That's awesome.
And it was really nice. The way the class was structured worked so well for me that it just, everything really clicked. I was like, yep, this is what I want to do. So
cool. What was the professor's name? We'll shout him out.
Professor David McConnell.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think you actually just inadvertently gave a great piece of advice for our listeners, which is like, either, you know, whether it's your first year or before you're starting your undergrad, like it's so important to make contacts with professors early on and not even being like necessarily asking like, can I work in your lab without experience, but just getting your name in their head so that if you need help down the line with anything revolving the major, like you have a resource and you have someone who can maybe guide you, or just say, here's an email of someone who can help you. I think that is just like very, very helpful and something that some people might not realize to do. And I really commend you for doing that, because you probably, that really set you up for success, I'm sure. Given that we're talking today, you've clearly had quite a bit of success within ANTH. Now you're going into your fourth year. How are you feeling about, just in general, have you kind of settled on like a sub field, or are you still pretty general within anthro?
Yeah, I would say, I think kind of from the beginning, I've been very cultural anthro. I mean, I remember in the like intro to anthropology, we kind of covered all the four fields of anthropology, and I enjoyed all of them. I remember like telling my dad like every single reading on the syllabus. I was like, this is so cool. But I think cultural has definitely been where my interest lies.
So something that you mentioned to me before we talked was that your school has kind of started a newer program or track that is in museum and archival studies. So what does that entail? And tell me a bit about the program.
Yeah, so it's this kind of overarching program that's called Pathways. So there's a bunch of different ones. Mine is museum and archival studies. And I think the intent behind kind of creating these pathways is it was very kind of career based. So you're kind of entering into this track with a specific career skill set or like experience set in mind. So it combines coursework. So you have to fulfill like certain requirement fields. There's also an experiential learning component. So last summer I had done a research assistantship with a museum studies professor. So that kind of counted. And then there's like a bunch of reflective things along the way. I know you have to like work on your resume and get like go to the career center for that. So I think that's been really helpful. I found that throughout like various experiences and internships, being kind of in a way forced to do that reflective process is so important to like take a step back and see, okay, like how does this fit into the bigger picture? And I think also something that's really interesting is I never actually thought I would do a pathway when they were first announced as a thing at my college. I thought like I had entered undecided and I had stuck with labeling myself as undecided for the first full year of my college experience. So I didn't really think I wanted to tie myself to like a specific career field, because that's what the pathway program seemed like. But I realized that it's not tying me to anything, and I feel like still having that reflective component in my like college experience is still going to be so helpful.
Yeah, and just giving you a different skill set, and almost it to me, it almost sounds kind of like an early professionalization sort of thing,
yeah,
in that you're learning how to package your skills and market yourself as someone who could get, you know, whatever career it is that you're looking for. And especially even like the resume and CV, that'll be really helpful just down the line. And if you decide to apply to grad school, just having some feedback on that just is really helpful. That's really interesting to hear about. And I like to hear about, you know, the different schools and things they're doing. I think one of my favorite things about the podcast is that I get to hear about a lot of different programs at different schools. And I'm glad that it's been a really good success for you. You also mentioned to me that you are now serving as the co-president of the Sociology Anthropology Club at your school. What are some of your favorite things about that club and just like the community? I know lots of times that's people's favorite things about clubs on campus is just, you know, getting to meet others.
Yeah, it's definitely been really nice. I actually started being a part of the club by accident my sophomore year. I had a friend who was friends with the current like incoming president, and he was asking for help for the exec board because I think everyone else was graduating, and I guess I don't remember saying this, but I guess I had offered my hand in help, and next thing I knew I was serving as co-secretary on the exec board, which was honestly great because it was in the midst of like the pandemic, everything was remote, but I was on campus, so it was kind of depressing.
Yeah,
but it was nice because it gave me such a good structure, and I met a lot of good friends through that. I feel like in terms of now being co-president, I think my favorite part, at least from last year, was, as you mentioned, definitely like the community building. Our department is technically sociology and anthropology combined, though you can specialize in each field as your major. So we have a ton of, it's a small school, but we have quite a few professors. So it's really nice because we're able to associate with them and work towards events. And it's fun because, you know, we'll have a movie night and professors will come, and it's kind of nice to hang out with them outside of like the more rigorous classroom setting.
Yeah. It definitely is. I know that quite well. I think that for me, actually, that was part of why I started my own podcast, was because I think probably my first year at UCSB, which is a huge school, I was like, these professors are up like quite literally on a pedestal up high. And it's like almost so scary to even try and have a normal conversation with them and think of them as a normal person, but like they're a normal person too. Yeah. They just happen to, you know, be in a more elevated status. But I'm really glad to hear too that the professors are really interactive with the club. I think honestly, if anyone can join or be on the exec board of a club in their major, I think it's a really, really beneficial thing because again, it teaches you that like communication with other people that you may work with down the line, whether it's just in classes or in like a job setting, you know. Have you found that specifically as the president, you've had to kind of change the way you not present yourself, but your responsibilities have probably changed? Has it been kind of a mindset shift, I guess, is what I was looking for.
Yeah, I think definitely it's made me think a lot about what it means to kind of be a leader, I guess. Mm. And because it's like, I have to be able to assert myself and kind of show some sort of authority, mm-hmm. but I'm someone who I don't like to be intimidating. I'm definitely not that kind of person. And I've been thinking about it a lot recently where I want the club to, in terms of the exec board, I want the club to be a space where we all can kind of find their own sense of leadership in each of our roles. So it's not just me bossing everyone around, because then no one is going to initiate things for themselves. And I think it's more fun along the way too if we all kind of collaborate in that way. Mm-hmm. It's been really cool though, because I don't know, it's just been really nice, and I enjoy everyone that I've been working with, and it's been a really nice time.
Oh, I just wanted to highlight that you also do, because one of my favorite things in the podcast is showing like work-life balance, and we're not all school, we're not all fun. It's a nice balance. You do band things and you play an instrument. How long have you been doing this?
Yeah, so I play clarinet at the College of Worcester. In the fall, we do marching band, except my high school did not have a marching band. We had a very small ragtag pep band for football games. So that was like my only experience with sports events with music. So I started my first year with the marching band, and it worked out. I figured out how to march, and it clicked somehow. So I've stuck with it, and now I'm entering my last year of it, and I'm really excited actually because me and my good clarinet friend, who we've actually been friends since like the first day of marching band before classes even started our first year. So the two of us are going to be section leaders for the woodwinds. So that'll be really cute. I'm excited.
That's cool. Yeah, that is really cool. I actually did Google the college beforehand and saw that the mascot was the Scotman, and I was like, oh, interesting. My next question is about, what you just did this summer, which is you just finished a several month long, 2 month long internship. Is it
It was actually 6 weeks, so 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Sorry.
Okay. So a 6 week internship with the American Anthro Association called the Lois Lamphere Summer Internship Program. How did you become interested in that and kind of start your process to then being accepted into it?
So I think it was something that I think it was something that first was on my radar maybe last year, like last school year. I think a friend had sent the link to the application website or the website that had the information about the internship. But it was at a point where it was kind of too late for me to apply for it. And I hadn't really done an internship before, so I wasn't super confident about applying. But I had it on my radar for this year, so I was prepared to apply. And I think I entered into it with not very many specific expectations. I just kind of wanted to be able to do an internship that was directly anthropology focused. Because in the past, like last summer, for example, I was working in a development office of a nonprofit. So I definitely could apply what I had learned in anthropology classes, but I wanted something that was more directly associated with the field.
That's cool. It's good for your CV. When you got accepted, what was your thought? Because, I mean, first of all, I've had internships, but I've never had an internship where I actually have to move somewhere for 6 weeks. Was it an exciting challenge?
I feel like it was something that, I mean, I knew that if I was accepted, I'd have to move to DC, but it was something so far off that I hadn't even really thought about it. And quite honestly, I didn't even think I was going to get accepted. So it was like, whoa. Now I actually have to like figure out what this is going to look like. But thankfully, I mean, the American Anthro Association was really helpful with like they got us housing on right on Capitol Hill, so
Oh, that's
super
great.
convenient and made everything work really smoothly, which is good because I am not a city person, so I need to be able to just navigate it very clearly. And I did, so I'm glad for that.
Had you visited Washington, D.C. before?
I had definitely been there in the past, maybe in high school. It's actually kind of funny because Worcester Band in the spring, which is symphonic band instead of marching band because it's no longer football season, we were actually supposed to visit DC on a tour in the spring of 2020, which didn't happen because of COVID. So I kind of joked that visiting or living in DC now was kind of fulfilling that unfulfilled intention, which was kind of nice.
That is so cool. So actually, I'm actually only 20 minutes from DC, so I'm really looking forward to getting to explore it more too. I've been in, and my mom and I like went to the Smithsonian and stuff, but just in general, exploring more of the non like big highlights of DC. It's a really cool place, and I'm glad you got to have that experience, and I'm glad that you were in a central location because that's definitely important.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know that you spent your time split. You would work sometimes at the Arlington office, maybe certain days a week, and then you would also work at the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage. Could you tell me just a little bit about how your work week looked like, and then we'll kind of dive into your responsibilities at each place and what you learned from it?
But the Folklife Festival started on the National Mall in late June and then ended on July 4th. So I was able to be at the festival Sunday and Monday, and then I did half a day of cleanup on Tuesday of that week. But basically, my job was to do a lot of evaluation and research kind of pertaining to that. So really looking at the experiences of the visitors and also the participants, which is like the term that we use for the people who are presenting their work at the festival. So a lot of that, when I was actually at the festival, was doing interviews with the participants, which is really exciting because I've never really interviewed people that I like don't know. So it was kind of scary, but everyone was super friendly, so it worked out.
Yeah, ethnography.
Yes, I felt like a true anthropologist. So that was a lot of what I was doing during the festival. And then a lot of the after work was kind of analyzing thank you notes and survey results. Or, you know, throughout the festival area on the mall, there were a bunch of places where visitors could kind of write, you know, this is what I'm doing to, you know, stay sustainable, or this is how I'm going to be more eco-friendly, or this is what I don't want to lose from climate change. A lot of those kind of reflective things posted throughout the festival. So I was then looking at photos of those and analyzing them, trying to identify the big themes. And then it all came together into one kind of cumulative report document that'll help with like future curation, but also development efforts to reach out to potential sponsors.
What is something that you took from that you feel like you can apply in your own research as you go forward, especially probably related to ethnography?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the interviewing, because as I said, I've never really interviewed people that I didn't already have some sort of relationship to before. Mm-hmm. So it was really exciting to just get a crack at that. I mean, everyone at the festival was already kind of in the mindset that they were to be friendly to whoever came up to them at their table. So obviously it's not like they were going to shoo me away when I told them I was a Smithsonian intern. And it's really nice too. I know you mentioned how it might relate to my environmental studies minor. It was really nice because, you know, everything that the participants were speaking about, whether it be sustainable agriculture or, you know, alternative fibers for your sustainable clothing or whatever, it's all a lot of the stuff that I've learned about before or I'm just personally passionate about. So it was really nice to just have not only a really lovely interview with someone, but also get to have like a really genuine conversation about something that I was actually interested in. So I'm excited because, I mean, my senior year, I have to do like a capstone thesis project, and it's definitely going to involve interviews. So I think I kind of want to keep that approach and the confidence I've gained going forward, which I think is going to be so helpful.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that. Do you have any kind of concept of how your capstone will unfold? Do you know what you're researching yet? Or do you have, if you don't know, is there kind of like a plan and a timeline for when you'll be working on that?
Yeah, so my junior year, I actually in the spring semester did a bit of prep for it because we have a class that kind of prepares you for senior year capstone. We actually call it independent study, or IS. So if you hear me saying IS, that's what I'm talking about.
Got it.
So yeah, my project is going to be about, are you familiar with Marie Kondo and like the decluttering?
Yeah,
so she's gotten very popular in the last couple of years, I think, because of her Netflix show. But I really want to look at her first book. What is it called? The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. It was something that I really loved reading when I was younger for some reason. And I really want to understand how her identity as a Japanese woman kind of plays through her writing and her method of decluttering. Because I think there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, if you look at, for example, her website where she sells a lot of household wares, a lot of things are marketed or labeled specifically as authentically Japanese, mm-hmm. Which makes me wonder kind of how like our understanding of like a culture or country kind of plays into, I guess, its appeal to Western audiences, or how we kind of understand what she's marketing towards a Western audience. definitely a lot of ways to go with that in terms of the research, but that's kind of the main premise. I just want to look at how her writing both reflects and communicates kind of Japanese culture and how it relates to home organization.
That is a very poignant question. And to be honest, like, I give you the absolute most props because that's a very sophisticated thing to want to look into. And I actually recently, my spring quarter of UCSB, I took an Anthro of Japan class. And truly, I've also visited Japan, so I kind of had a pre-existing like interest.
Yeah.
It's such a unique culture. And there is so much to learn, especially from an anthropology perspective, about how we've adopted certain Japanese cultural phenomena in America, well, in the West in general. So I may want to read that after you write it, because that is so cool. And I think, I think you'll have a lot to unpack and a lot to contribute. And I think honestly, like, that's such a great way to set yourself up. Like, that's because there's a lot within that. I think sometimes being like too niched down within a senior thesis can almost like put you in a box of like, this is the only thing I'm ever going to study. Not that it has to, but some people can kind of see it like that if they like get really invested in one thing. And that has, you know, so many different layers to unpack, and hopefully will really set you up for you know, whatever you decide to do after you graduate from Worcester. I keep saying it wrong. Worcester.
Worcester.
What, if any, advice or lessons do you think you could share with anyone else who may be in a similar stage of their academic journey wanting to do an internship? I know that's kind of a broad question, so you can take it however you like, but just really anything you think that you've learned or that you feel like you would have done differently, knowing, you know, having done several internships now, just some general kind of thoughts on how someone who may be getting their first internship may want to listen to.
Yeah, I guess what first comes to mind is just imposter syndrome is really real. I mean, I said I did not think I would get this internship. I just applied for the heck of it to see what happened because it didn't hurt. And here I am. I think something that's really good for that is reaching out to professors or maybe advisors or mentors that have known you quite a bit at college, or just know you in general, I guess, and what your interests and work style is, I guess. Mm-hmm. And just meeting with them to kind of go over application materials or just kind of figure out how you want to describe yourself in writing, because it's really hard to kind of step back and then explain to someone else like what you're like as a person, whether it be for like a personal statement or even a resume. I think that was a really big thing. I mean, my advisor has been so helpful and just honestly giving me a confidence boost and being like, no, okay, like you're fine, you're doing okay, like don't worry about it. So I think just having like a second set of eyes to look over your materials or someone to talk through those things is super helpful, just to kind of get out of your mind a bit when thinking things through.
I think that's a wonderful piece of advice. And yes, imposter syndrome, it never goes away, sadly. Well, I shouldn't say it never goes away. It doesn't go away for quite a while, and I deal with it quite often myself as a young podcaster. But I think it's important that we're transparent about it and saying, you know, it's not like we're all just going to pretend like everything's hunky-dory. We have to be honest and say, you know, sometimes I need my mentor to remind me that I'm worthy of an opportunity like the opportunity that you got. Mm-hmm. And I commend you for being able to reflect on that and sharing that with our listeners about how important, how helpful that was for you, because I think it definitely is for a lot of people. And, you know, I hope it'll, this is what I always think when, you know, a mentor is able to kind of help you work through something, you kind of take that and go, hopefully I'll be able to do that for someone someday too, and be able to instill that confidence. So I think that's a really good lesson to take away from all of that is, you know, supporting each other. But also, like you said, learning how to write about yourself in a way that is accurately reflecting. You'll be set for grad school applications if you've now mastered that, because that, for me, the personal statement was what I spent just hours and hours and hours on, being like, how do I describe myself and my ambitions in a non-cliche and or braggy way, because it can be easy to almost like talk yourself up in a non-productive way. Like, obviously you want to highlight your accomplishments and work skills, but it can be hard to find that balance of professionalism and confidence versus like bragging, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense.
So I think the last thing that I wanted to chat about was just some of your other favorite things that happened this summer, whether it was like in DC or just, I don't know, some other fun life things, because I just, like I told you earlier, I like to promote about all the fun things that happen in life and all of the experiences we have that are not necessarily school related. So just, do you have any favorite moments from the summer?
Yeah, I think I really just enjoyed being able to walk to almost anything I wanted to visit. DC was really nice. I lived maybe 10, 15 minutes from Eastern Market on Capitol Hill. Cool. So there is like the market. I think it might just be Saturdays and Sundays. I could be totally wrong. But I only went on Saturdays or Sundays. And it was really nice just seeing all the food and like jewelry and stuff that people were wearing. I'm actually wearing earrings that I got from one of the shops.
Cool.
And it was it was really nice. I remember like one morning I got up early to eat at like a cafe outside in the market area, and then I went grocery shopping and went to the market. I definitely was trying to pack in a lot of museums, which can get exhausting very quickly. Like after two museums, I'm done for the day. I can't, and I'm someone who has to be very thorough and like read every single time, which is exhausting even if it's cool. So it was nice to take some time just to relax a bit. Another really nice thing is my roommate, who is also my co-intern, we went down to the wharf one day and just sat outside and read for a couple hours. It was just so nice. And
yeah.
I don't know, just peaceful things like that was kind of nice, especially when you think of a city as being super busy, like hustle bustle. So yeah.
I completely understand. It's the simple things in life that get us, you know, get us to the finish line. And also, you know, you were interning every day of the week from 9 to 5 or somewhere around there. So yeah, you know, it's nice to take that time off to just do little things. And you're right, walking, being able to walk to things is like such a special thing. Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting with me today and answering all my questions. I'm really glad that I got to share your story with our listeners. And I'm so happy that you had such a great summer and you took so much from it, because that's what's really important, is taking all of the lessons learned and applying them as you continue on your academic journey.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been great.
Today, we have another lovely guest who did a summer internship with the American Anthro Association this summer, Jeanette Lombardi. So welcome. I'm really glad to have you here. Another student about to start grad school. So we were kind of chatting about that beforehand. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So we're going to just kind of briefly give the listeners a little background about you, kind of some of your goals, some of the experiences you've had prior to your summer internship. So just to start, I mentioned that Jeanette was about to start her Master's of Science. That'll be at Syracuse University in the Biomedical Forensic Science program, which is really exciting. She comes from Monmouth University, with a major in anthropology and a minor in biology and archaeology. What are some of your main things that you're looking forward to in this new program? You mentioned to me that it's kind of a shift, you know, you're going to forensic science from anthropology. So what are you looking forward to?
I'm really excited to get more into the forensic field. In undergrad, I focused mainly on forensic anthropology and archaeology. So I'm excited to bring like more forensic anthro into this program and get a little bit of experience in DNA analysis. That's something that this program will allow me to focus on, and I'm excited to explore that.
Yeah, it's a really valuable skill. One of my roommates does that specifically within BioArc, but the same kind of like DNA stuff, which is cool. What are some of your fondest memories from Monmouth?
I really love the department there. I made friends both in the department and out, and everyone in there was really great. I also worked a couple jobs on campus there, and I gave tours to incoming first year students. So honestly, I really loved doing that. I met so many people that way, and everyone's really friendly. So I really love those aspects of my undergrad.
Do you feel like it almost made you like become even more of like a Monmouth stan because you had to like talk so highly of it, like on tours?
I can tell you every single fact about Monmouth that exists, because I like to be able to do that job well, like you need to know everything about the school, and like you need to know everything about the programs. Like we have admissions counselors who know specifically everything that they need to. I know a lot. Like I'll be like, I wonder how big this is. Their campus is 168 acres. Like,
oh, cool.
Like, it's just like fun facts now that I have in my head.
What's the student population?
Are we talking about like number of undergrads? Okay. So there's about 4,200 undergraduates, and with grad students, about like 6,6100. Honestly, it doesn't really feel small. Like, you know, a lot of people, and the department's really tight knit there, which I loved because then I knew all the professors. I was able to work with them. Like, I knew the other students my age too.
It definitely is. I actually, now that I'm at George Mason, I don't quite know numbers wise, but it's smaller than UCSB. Like, for example, like the intro to bioanth class I'm TAing for has like 40 people. My intro to bioanth was like 200 or 300 or something.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So it's different, and it's actually making me really appreciate smaller schools, not tiny schools. Because I still personally don't think I could strive in like 1,000 to 2,000 person school.
No, I don't think so either. I really got to know the underclassmen like under me, and honestly, like, I was applying my knowledge I had as a tour ambassador, like, my knowledge of the school, the programs. Like, really, I was just, like, spouting information, like, everywhere. I was like, what do you need to know? I have every fun fact you could ever possibly want, which I like. I like doing that. So, really, like, pulling that into being a TA, I am TAing for a General Biology 1 laboratory course here at Syracuse. So I am the lab instructor. I have about 20 students under me in both of my classes, which will be fun. It'll be exciting. I haven't, with the way COVID was, I wasn't able to be in the lab as much as I would have been otherwise. So I think it'll be fun to do that. And I'll be able to bring in my knowledge that I have of like helping other students, guiding them. TAs are kind of just another resource for students to use. They're kind of like a go-between between students and full-time faculty, and you're closer in age, then maybe they're more comfortable talking to you than the professor. So I feel I have with my kids I peer mentored, because I was between them and the dean of the honor school, and she's great, but sometimes kids feel like overwhelmed, or they just are nervous, even though like you can be a really personable person, and then you still have like a first year student who's just new to college and living away from home, and maybe they just have questions that they feel like you could answer better. So I feel like I'm pulling that knowledge in too. I also, besides peer mentoring, I tutored. So I tutored every possible anthropology class you could ever think of that I've ever taken, and like elementary Italian and biology. I'm able to pull in the information I've learned and taught from them, and then apply it in this classroom setting. So I think that's exciting, and it'll be a new chapter for me to adventure into.
Definitely. I feel the same way going into TAing. I just have to constantly remind myself to set the boundary of like being friendly but not being friends with them, because it is our
absolutely
job. And I peer mentored as well in undergrad, so it's a bit different because you can't be friends with, you know, your students. And I'm not saying, you know, I think there's a big difference between friends and friendly, so I think there's that line to deal with. But I'm also excited. I like the idea that, you know, like you were saying, the students can come to us with the things that they just may need more personal help with. However, it was funny when I was introducing myself to my students, I was like, talk to me about anything except Northern Virginia geography, because Lord knows that I don't know it yet.
Ask me anything about California and I can help you there.
I was like, California, I got that. So
yeah.
All right. So what did you do your theses on?
Yeah, so I actually did two.
Congratulations, girl. I didn't even do one. That's because the UCSB, I can say this now that I've graduated, the UCSB honors thesis course is a train wreck.
Oh, yeah. The honors school, they allow for either like a typical research thesis, or you can do like a capstone project and make something entertaining and fun. So for them, I like where my research aligned with anyway, like it was easier and more in my like realm for me to do the research thesis. And I was able to kind of use some of my same sex estimation material. That way it was like a whole new thesis. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the effects of sexual dimorphism and the construction of femininity and masculinity. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. It was more along the lines of like feminist anthropology, cultural anthro, and like forensics, which I love the combination of. And it was really fun to be able to look at not only the skeletal analysis, but like I looked into media too, like media portrayals of like what people expect men and women to look like. I actually pulled in some cartoons too. So you know the movie Encanto that came out recently? I actually included Louisa from it in my analysis. People had some things to say. So it was really interesting to talk about and research. So
that's fun. It seems like a nice interdisciplinary study and something that, you know, I mean, I think the more that we can pull in popular media. So what are some of your goals after your master's? I know, obviously, don't get me wrong, I don't have any like specific goals after my master's. So I don't mean anything like specific, but just kind of generally in your perfect world, like where are you kind of hoping to take your career?
Yeah, so I actually kind of have that planned out a little bit, but I'm also leaving it up to kind of see. I'm leaving it to see where I go. So I've always wanted my PhD. And I've been striving towards that. So I was kind of thinking maybe getting back into like a biological anthropology degree and being able to like adapt my forensics to that. Mm-hmm. We'll see if I want to keep doing that. And that's, you know, still my same path. I'm working with the anthropology department here. I'm taking some classes. They have a bioarchaeologist. So I'm trying to see like what kind of experience I can get with her, you know?
I think I know who it is. What's her name?
Shannon Novak.
Yeah. I was like, I'm pretty sure I like emailed someone to work there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I reached out to her and I'm taking two of her classes this semester, anthropology of death and human osteology.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. I'm very excited. I just got one of my books for the class from the library on campus.
Cool.
And I'm like walking back to my apartment holding a book that says death, mourning, and burial. I'm like, yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is fine. So I'm really still trying to keep some anthro while I'm here, but I want to delve more into forensics, and that's what the whole degree is for.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see if that's something I'd rather just get into, and if I like that more, then maybe I won't get my PhD, but I think as of right now, I'm just going to kind of leave it up to see what the cards are, and
yeah.
Ideally, I want to work for like a medical examiner's office or the government agency for like criminal cases.
It's good, I feel like, to have the goals, but also to understand the goals can change. Literally had a mental breakdown when I decided that forensic anth wasn't for me. And it just wasn't for me. I have nothing against forensic anth as a whole. It wasn't for me. But for so long, I had been saying that that's what I wanted to do, that when I came to the realization, I had a full breakdown because I was like, this is what I've said I wanted for so long. And it's so funny because it's not like I detoured that much. It's like I'm in bioarch. So it's not, I mean, I'm still working with bones. It's just old bones versus new bones. So yeah, I think that's kind of a good, just a little note to anyone else who's like in the kind of similar stages as Jeanette and I, like everyone's plans change in little, big, or in between ways. And it's totally all right. And it's all right to have goals, but also to be aware that they're going to change. So I think that's our little nugget of advice from
definitely.
So now I'd love to chat about your internship with the AAA, which is the American Anthro Association. You started it about, I believe Kayla was saying, it was like around July.
Yeah, so we moved down. I moved down like right before the 4th of July. Okay. So it was nice and hot down there, you know.
Sure.
I worked between the American Anthropological Association and the Naval History and Heritage Command for 6 weeks with my field site at the Washington Navy Yard. The Naval History and Heritage Command. I worked under their underwater archaeology branch. So that was super fun. And I love the experience I got from being able to rotate the work I was able to complete.
Mm-hmm. What specifically would you do at the Naval History and Heritage Command?
So while I was there, there were four or five interns who were working, and I was the only one with the III. The other ones were under a different program. But we were all pretty much working on the same project, which was the ship, the Royal Savage. It was a British schooner that sank during the American Revolution. Americans shot it down. Then they actually took it and like fixed it up, and they used it against the British, and the British shot it down and they blew it up, and it was a whole big battle. But the point of that being, it sank. And then in the 1930s, it was retrieved and kind of sat around in a barn for 70-ish years, maybe 80 years, because no one wanted to put out the money to kind of make a museum around it or actively preserve it. All of the parts of it were kept. The man who retrieved it, Lorenzo Haglund, he didn't want to sell any of the pieces, which was really great for us. And I worked on the documentation of it. So the way they document, they make artifact cards, which lists out all the information you could possibly need, like descriptions of it, size, weight, markings on it that are specific, the condition, and any associated objects. And then we actually drew pictures of what they looked like too.
Cool.
Which was fun. Yeah. I like drawing. So I had fun drawing like little pictures of everything. And then besides that, I took photographs of the artifacts. The process for that is kind of like lengthy and specific. Like I didn't realize how much goes into it, but I had to take pictures at different exposures and pick the best ones. You have to have your measure for it and label, and then you have to like crop everything and pick the best one. I liked it though. I really liked the process of that. Some of the other interns were working on like conservation, but besides that, I did like a side project too where I got information about this submarine that they might take out of the water. So I did like a summary of all of the documents that they had about it. It was a lot of emails and then like history packets that they had from the First World War when the submarine sank. So that was fun to go through and see. And yeah. I was able to pose anthropological questions for it. So I was like, yeah. I was the one writing up the questions being like, so what does the conservation process look like? What do we do with the human remains that are found on there? Because a lot of people died when that submarine sank.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting being able to get all this experience. Yeah. And everyone there was super knowledgeable. Like you would ask questions and they would just know the answers, or they would look them up and help you figure out everything. I had never done underwater archaeology before.
Specifically, can you give us any insight into what some of the artifacts you were cataloging were?
Absolutely, I can. So I worked on like an axe head, some barrel lids, a lot of different types of objects. So there was like metal iron objects, organic composite, organic wood. There were ship timbers. There were some lead artifacts. And when you work with lead artifacts, you have to take more precautions. So besides just wearing your typical gloves, you also need a lead mask to wear just in case. So I had to wear a lead mask because there were dust particles from the lead on it. I worked on some cannon shot, which were fun, and I accidentally found some grenades.
Was that a little adrenaline pumping, heart racing?
It was like, I take it to my boss, and I was like, hey, this looks a little funky. Why are all these holes here? Like, I know what this, like, white webbing is. It's from, like, old insects that died in here. But then, obviously, we had to take precautions and be like, well, now we need to find all of the, quote, cannon shots, you know? That might not be cannon shots and put them in the solution to make sure they're somehow active, which is great because I was carrying them in baggies in my arms to take pictures of them first. And I was like, they go up. So do I.
Yeah.
We had a little bit of an interesting day. Uh-huh. I was like, I was almost done cataloging these. I was so close.
Yeah.
And then we had to go back through them. There's a lot of them too. So, but of the 13 that we like took aside to put in the solution, only four of them were really grenades and none of them were active.
Cool.
Luckily.
Yeah, I think from the story probably would have ended differently if they were.
Yeah, Exactly. But it's a fun little story to be able to tell people, like, hey, I found some grenades by accident.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because I know you were working within a museum. Was there anything that you saw that you weren't necessarily working on that was kind of like special or unique or something you maybe wouldn't have expected to be in a museum like that?
They are currently under renovations. They're moving a couple different office spaces around. So we were sharing like the museum with the Cold War, but it was interesting being able to go through it and see what they had. We actually were given a tour through the full museum exhibit by one of their so one of their tour guides. He showed me and three of the other interns around the museum. Actually, it was really cool. They had part of a ship that was built into the museum. Like, I guess when they were creating it, they built it directly like into the building itself.
That's so cool.
And they had some tiles that were from like important ships that
That's
were like
cool.
on the tiles.
So that was 3 days of your week. The other
Yeah.
2 days you were at the actual AAA office. One day was
Yeah.
virtual, right?
Yeah, the one day was virtual. I lived with Kayla on Capitol Hill, which was really cool.
Yeah.
We were like 2 blocks from the Library of Congress and the Capitol building itself. So I
Cool.
sat outside the Library of Congress that one day a week, and I did my work from there.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was great. They had free Wi-Fi. Yeah. I was like,
Cool.
perfect. That's perfect for me. So I
Yeah.
sat there. I was able to get outside a little bit. I love being outside, so I was glad to be able to sit out there even for a little bit.
What were
So
your
that.
thoughts in general about living in DC and working in DC? I feel like it's definitely a unique experience being in a city like that, especially one that, has so much history, but is also quite literally our nation's capital.
Yeah, I like would forget periodically that this was the nation's capital, and then I would just kind of like remember it and be like, wait, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you like get used to it, and then you're like, oh yeah, now this makes sense why there's so many people here. I had never lived in a city though before, so I was like a little bit nervous about finding my way. My sense of direction is not good. I even learned that when I was out in the field, like working for the CRM firm I worked for, and we had maps showing where you had to go. And I was like walking around, looking in a circle, trying to figure out which direction it was. But
Been there.
yeah, usually figured out. Like I based off of where everyone else was placed and like figured out. Like I got better at reading maps, so I did,
That's great.
which is good for my sense of direction. Not completely lost anywhere. Getting a little bit better. But living in a city, I was like nervous. I was like, I don't know anything around me. Like, I don't know where good areas to be in, where good restaurants are and stuff. I liked where we lived on Capitol Hill. I thought it was like really nice. And it was like close to places. I didn't actually find living there hard though. Like, I thought it
Good.
was gonna be a lot harder to live in a city and try to figure my way out. And it wasn't like you kind of just get into like the groove of it. Yeah, which is fun. And then like there's so many things to do too. So I always was like busy, which is great.
Yeah. Would you think you would recommend to other students that this is, an interesting and thought-provoking internship?
Oh, absolutely. What I did between the AAA and the UAB were completely different. And I loved that. I like that they were different because they gave me two different experiences for one internship. I don't think I talked about what I did with the AAA. But for them, I actually worked on a member survey they had. They put out a member survey in 2021. And I worked on the data visualizations for them.
Oh, cool.
So I made like tables and charts and graphs like based on the results from the survey. And then I actually wrote the report for it, which I am like co-authoring with Daniel Ginsberg.
Oh, I met them.
Yeah, Daniel's great. So it was really fun to work under them. And I worked a lot. I don't know if you talked to Caitlin too. She works under him. And they were great to work with. And I thought it was really great the experience I had. They also had a whole bunch of side projects for us to work on if they wanted like to not work on a main project for a little bit, which I like because doing different things is fun. And as much experience as I can get, like I'll take, you know?
Yeah, diversifying
So
your skill set.
exactly. Like, we worked on going through articles from Anthropology News to put together a reader for like high school and college students. We worked on like the AI and task force, which has to do with like Native Americans in North America. We worked on like increasing accessibility in YouTube videos, like through captioning, which is not something I thought I'd ever do. And that's, we actually, Kayla and I don't know if she mentioned it, but we worked on an article that's going to be published for Anthropology News about what we did in this internship.
Oh, awesome. I don't think she mentioned that.
Yeah, so hopefully it'll come out at some point soon. It was a little bit of like what our week in the life was like.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That was fun to write about. And we have so many pictures too from everything that we did. So I loved it.
You'll have to send some of the pictures to post on the podcast Instagram.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I didn't know the podcast had an Instagram.
Yeah, at That Anthro Podcast. Listeners, follow, please.
I'm about to follow you right now.
Yay. So. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I'm really glad that we got a chat, and I'm glad that your internship was a great experience. You know, I really believe in, like I was saying, diversifying your skill set, moving somewhere. I mean, even just the fact that you were able to navigate a city and public transportation, because I know you guys would take the metro a lot.
Oh, yeah.
4 or 6 weeks, that in and of itself is such an accomplishment, mm-hmm. and really a testament to your work ethic and the fact that, you know, you can adapt in lots of situations. So yeah, I don't need to tell you that I'm proud of you, but I just want you to know you did a cool thing, and
yeah,
I'm really glad that you wanted to come on and tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to talk about it at any time. Like, this internship really just, it was a great experience, and it's not what I thought I would ever get. This was actually my second year I applied, I think I applied the year before too, but I had more experience going in this year. Especially in archaeology, even though I know I said I focus on forensic anthro, I have done a lot of archaeology and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it like pulls me into that little like rabbit hole where I'm like, maybe I want to do this forever. And then I'm like, do I want to do underwater archaeology now? Do I not want to do forensics anymore? And then like you start thinking, and honestly, I love doing a little bit of everything, and I feel like that's what I was able to do.